It's April 9th, 1993. I want to talk with you about your gold mining. I have seen at least one article in the Kodiak Mirror about your gold mine. It looks like very hard work, but very rewarding. Let's begin by finding out how you got started in gold mining.
Well, where I grew up in Tocotno, it is gold, a lot of gold mining there. That's the main economy and has been for many years. After we gave our fishing permit to our son, we wanted to go back and visit Tocotno. I hadn't been back there in 25 years. So I went back and had a nice visit with my school chums. And while we were there, a gold miner who knew my family and knew Smokey real well came and got us at Yankee Creek and took us up to Colorado Creek to see his mine. He used to mine at Yankee Creek, and he let us use his Quonset hut there and let us prospect there on his patented land. Well, we just really appreciated this, and we went up to Colorado Creek, which is towards Ruby from Yankee Creek, and spent a couple days with him there and watched them mine. And when we came back, I just told Smokey that I just wanted an excuse to go back there every year. And wouldn't it be fun if we could just play around, do a little bit of mining ourselves? So I mentioned it, and the idea grew and grew on him, and pretty soon he thought it was his idea. So he thought that was great. So a friend of ours wanted to try the same thing, so our friend Darlo Dayton and Smokey got together and got equipment from the junkyard, and some that Darlo had and some he'd brought up from Seattle, and Darlo built the sluice box. He welded aluminum and made the sluice box that was just the right size for our operation, and that's how we got started. And it was so much fun. We've gone back every year, except I went back last year, but we didn't mind because the equipment's pretty much broke down, and it would take just too much of an investment to get it operating again. So it's kind of at a rest period right now, but someday I may go back and try it again. But we really did enjoy it, and some years were quite profitable to us.
Where's your gold mine located? Is it close to a village? Describe how you get there from Kodiak.
Well, when we go up there, sometimes we just go as far as Anchorage the first day and do some grocery shopping and then catch the plane the next day into McGrath. You can make it all in one day. If you leave here in the morning, you fly to Anchorage and then you catch a Dash 7 from Anchorage into McGrath with Mark Air, and then you get a bush plane from McGrath, and you can fly either to the gold mine at Yankee Creek or fly to Tocotno. And we usually fly to Tocotno because we have friends there that we like to stop and visit before we go to the gold mine. So, and that's where our equipment is, our vehicle for running back and forth. We used to have a Subaru Brat that worked out real well, but it's in pretty bad shape. So now I have a Honda 250 four-wheeler, and it works great. I can get out to the mine in an hour on that, and it's easy on the gas, which is an important factor because up there gas is over $2 a gallon, and I like it. It makes lots of noise and scares the bears. So, and I've seen several bears from my four-wheeler, and also a moose. And you look pretty little when you're on a four-wheeler looking at a big moose, and hope he just wants to keep going and not turn around and get angry at you. So, but that's how we get there.
Can you tell me what process you use from start to finish to mine gold?
Well, the way we do it is not the same way as the big miners do it. They have a lot of heavy equipment, and what material we move in one day, they do in 1 hour. So it just, you know, we're just a Mickey Mouse setup. But it's fun, and we have gotten some nice nuggets with our venture. We have a hopper and then a vibrator table, and then a sluice box right underneath. And what happens is we take the loader and we get a scoop of pay dirt and we dump it into the hopper, and then we hit it with a 3-inch hose, and the water force pushes the material down a chute, and it goes onto the vibrating table and vibrates all the big rocks out, and the small stuff, the fines they call it, drop down into the sluice box, and the water drops down with it and continues to wash it through the sluice box, and most of your coarse gold drops in the first 3 or 4 riffles because it is so heavy. It just goes and gets lodged in there. And in the sluice box we have astroturf on the bottom, and then we have bars going across to make the riffles. The bars are bolted in so that you can take them off when you go to do your cleanup. So you have this astroturf on the bottom of your sluice box, and you have these bars bolted on each side to hold them in place, and that's what holds your dirt and your gold. And we wash for maybe, it's called sluicing. We sluice for anywhere from 4 days to a week, or maybe even 2 weeks, and then we have a cleanup. And that's when you have your cleanup, you take your sluice box apart and you rinse everything, because gold will stick to anything. So you rinse all the bars going across, you roll up the astroturf and put it in a tub, and be careful not to lose anything because your gold is concentrated, and it's if you have hit pay dirt, which you hope you have, there should be a lot of concentrated gold in that astroturf. So you take and put that in a tub or bucket, and then you take and wash out the sluice box and wash it into a tub or bucket, and that you take all this stuff down to where the water's clean, and you sit and you pan it all. And there's other ways to separate the gold from the dirt, but panning is the fastest and easiest for me. And then you pan it and clean it. What I do is I just pan it as clean as I can, and then I put it on in a metal pie tin and put it on the stove, on the wood stove, and let it dry. And then you dump it on a piece of paper and you blow the sand off, and then your clean gold, you just make a funnel with your paper and dump it into a jar. And then when you're ready to sell, you just cap your jars and bring them on the plane to Anchorage and sell them to one of the refineries there.
What is the greatest amount of gold you have mined in one season?
Well, let's see, we got $25,000 once in one season, and that's when gold was selling it at right around $400 an ounce. So that's the best we've ever done.
Has the price of gold per ounce fluctuated very much?
Well, at one time gold went up to about $800 an ounce, but that was before we started mining. Since we've started mining, it's gone up as high as about $545 an ounce, and dropped as low as $325, but it seems to hold an average of about, I'd venture to guess it averages out at probably $375 an ounce.
What is the largest gold nugget you've ever found?
The largest nugget we found is 2 3/4 ounces, and it's flat on one side. So when we dumped it in the hopper, of course you have this big mountain of dirt, you have no idea how much gold you have in it. And our son was helping us, and he was washing out the sluice box, giving it a final rinse, and he spotted the nugget, and he jumped up in the hopper and grabbed the nugget, and he was waving it, and so it was so exciting we all had to stop and ooh and ah over the nugget. And so we call that our brag nugget. That's the biggest one we've ever found. We found a 3/4 ounce nugget and some that are a little bit smaller, a little bit bigger, but most of our money we make with the fines, the real fine gold, because you sell that to the refinery, and there's more of it. It takes longer to get, but there's more of it, and so that's where your money is. You make money off the nuggets too, but in fact, one year I made more money selling nuggets than we did selling the fines. So it depends on what you have to offer, and seems like every nugget that we ever had, we had a buyer for it without even advertising. They knew we had them and they wanted them. So.
How many other gold mines are near yours?
1, 2, 3, 5. 5 in the immediate area. And they're all big compared to ours.
Would it be difficult for someone to get started in mining now?
Yeah, it would be, because in the number one, you have to know which ground you can mine. Number two, you don't know how much gold there is, so you have to prospect. So you have to make this initial investment without really knowing what you're going to be getting out of it. And number two, the cost of getting the equipment there, you have to get it down to Bethel and then up the river. You have to go up the Kuskokwim River to Sterling Landing, and that's pretty costly. Just getting it like from Anchorage to Bethel is going to be costly enough, and then to continue up the Kuskokwim River as far as Sterling is pretty extensive. Also, the cost of maintenance and the cost of fuel. It's just really hard when you break down. You know, every day is costing you, because you can only mine like from the 1st of May, middle of May in some places, until the 1st of October, because the ground is too frozen the rest of the time. So,
what would be the startup cost for someone starting?
Provided you had your equipment already, you could probably get started for about $20,000 if you had your equipment. We were fortunate in that we had a junkyard, so we could put together some equipment, you know, and we had some equipment that maybe it wasn't in the best of shape, but it run and it got us by.
Do you like mining better than fishing?
I don't know. I enjoy doing them both. They're both hard work, and I like doing both of them, because there's so many things you can do at the same time, like gardening. I always have a garden when I fish, and I always have a garden when I gold mine. One thing about it, when you get tired of mining, you can go pick berries or go do something else. But when it's fishing time and time to fish, you have to fish. Also, gold doesn't stink like fish does, so I like doing both. I don't know which I like doing best. I'm going to go back to fishing this summer. Maybe after the summer I can answer you better.
Can you describe a typical day when you're working at the mine?
Well, when the year that we did the best, our typical day went, we'd get up at 5, 6 o'clock and have our coffee and maybe a slice of toast, and we go out and go to work before it got really hot, because up there you're closer to the Arctic Circle, so your days are warm, hot even, 80 degrees a lot of the time. And mosquitoes are bad, so in the early morning the mosquitoes aren't so bad and it isn't so hot. So we'd work for probably two hours, maybe three, and then we'd come back and fix sourdough hot cakes and have a good big breakfast, and then we'd lay down for maybe half an hour and go back to work. And then we'd work until 1 o'clock, take a break for lunch, and rest for an hour, and then go back to work till it was time to fix supper. Sometimes Smokey would work in the evenings to loosen material to wash the next day. He would put in a longer day than we would, although we were busy with the gardening and and cooking and laundry and whatnot. So all the days were filled, but we still had fun. The miners next to us would come over and we'd get together and have poker games, or we'd play Tripoli but so many of the times we'd all be so tired we just wanted to go to bed at the end of the day. And the only time we didn't put in a real full day was when the weather was bad. So we'd still put time in, but we wouldn't work as many hours. Just our spirits would get dampened as well as our clothes.
Can you describe the village of Takotna around the mine?
Yeah, Takotna is 23 miles from the mine. The last census, there were 32 people living there, and that included the children. So you can pretty much envision the size of it. There's a post office and a store that sells the basic staples. She has a freezer that has two or three different kinds of meat. And butter and bread and bacon, and sometimes they run out of bread and you have to bake your own bread sometimes. She sells eggs and pretty much the basic staples. There's a bar there, Cotton Bar, run by Dave Miller. And there's a family, their job is to go up and meet the mail plane every day, Monday through Saturday, sometimes twice a day. And they have a minimum amount of road work that they do. Usually they come up from McGrath. Someone hired by the state comes up and takes care of the roads twice during the summer, and that's about it for maintenance of the road. Once in a while it'll get really bad and they'll have to put more time in on it. They have a nurses, a health nurse they're called. She is a registered nurse, but not all of them are in the villages. Sometimes they have a public police officer, and sometimes they don't. They have a washateria where they do the laundry, and they have specified days that they have to do their laundry, and people get their drinking water either from the PHS building or else from a creek that's about 2 miles out of town, and they've had that water tested every year to make sure that it's safe for drinking. And that water is where I get my water when I go to my cabin, which is 4 miles from Takotna, which I just had built 2 years ago. It's a small cabin, 12 by 24, just right for. I hope to go there next year and see the Iditarod racers go by. My sister lives in Takotna now, so it's kind of nice to go back every year. I love to go back and pick berries and just visit with all my friends. Some of the kids they're not kids anymore. Well, kind of, but we went to school together, so it's always fun to go back and visit. Both of my grandfathers are buried in Takotna. My grandfather Twitchell had potato farms there, and he raised and sold a lot of potatoes up and down the Kuskokwim River, and sometimes even as far as the Yukon they would buy his potatoes. He also grew cabbages and turnips and rutabagas. And my childhood there was a very happy childhood. We were always busy doing something, and we were from a large family and always had everything we wanted. I felt so.
How has mining changed since you started?
Mining has changed in the fact that you used to go out to the mining camp and you were there for months at a time. Whereas now, most people find an excuse to come into town, if not every day, every other day. So there's a lot more miners travel back and forth to the village than used to be, I think. And as far as mining methods, years ago, they used to operate 24 hours a day, but now they just work 8 hours a day, so, sometimes longer when they're sluicing or when they're taking the ground cover off. I forget what they call that. Anyway, stripping it's called. Yeah, they strip off the top layer of ground and get down to pay dirt. They have to keep panning to see where the gold is, if they're down to it yet or even, and when they're mining, they have to continually test pan to see if they're still in the gold, or if they're out of it, there's no sense going deeper. So they continually test pan to see how they're doing as far as hitting the gold goes. And what else was the part of your question?
Do the miners use any of the rivers around there for transportation?
Oh yes, yes. See, the Yankee Creek runs into the Innoko, and the Innoko drains into the Yukon. And there's a lot of people that use the rivers for recreation. And years ago, they used to freight their supplies up in the winter months when it was frozen. They'd take a bulldozer and they'd pull almost like a train, a sledge, you know, a big sledge that would have equipment on it, and then they could pull, they even would pull what they call a wanigan, which would be just a little box-like thing. It had a cook stove in it and usually a couple bunks and all their cooking gear, and that would take care of them while they were on this freight train. But that's how they got their fuel and everything to the gold mine years ago. But now most all their fuel and whatnot is either brought up by barge or else it's flown in. They have big landing strips now and big airplanes that can carry equipment, even bulldozers.
How big was your largest gold nugget?
That was the 2 3/4 ounce that was flat on one side, and that's the largest one we found. The person up from us, Eep Anderson, found a 45 ounce nugget about 5 years ago. That was really exciting. It's about the size of a man's hand.
Do any of the Athabaskan Indians work in the mines?
Yeah, there's a lot of them that work and have worked for several years for the same person. When someone breaks in a crew, it's to their advantage to keep the same crew so they don't have to keep training people. And a lot of them are either Eskimo or Athabaskan. There's some that are excellent mechanics, and usually they don't have just one person doing one thing. They have to be versatile. They have to be able to switch off, and if they need another person to sluice, then they, you know, somebody has to be able to step right in and do it. Same with running a cat and they have to be able to switch around and do each other's jobs.
Have there ever been any mining accidents up there?
You know, I don't recall any mining accidents at all. So I think they've always been pretty careful.
Are most of the mines individually owned rather than corporately owned?
Yes, they're individually owned. The only big ones that I've heard about is like the Red Dog mine that's up by Ruby, and the AJ mine in Juneau, but most of them are individually or family owned, and most of them have their own airplane.
Is some of the mining equipment specialized?
Some of it is, yeah. Like for separating the gold. But most of them still just pan, separate the gold, and the gold they take into the refinery will have a lot of black sand in it still. So, but they smelt it down and get all the impurities out. So,
do you think mining is going to become more difficult with a new Clinton administration?
You know, I really don't know. I really don't know. It's I think everybody's kind of sitting back waiting to see what he's going to do. With the economy being like it is, I would think he would want to keep the activity going just to create jobs. But being a Democrat, I know they're not too anxious to open up the refuge land either to miners or fishermen or loggers or any of it. So I really don't know how it's going to go. But personally, I think if it's handled right, they can do both. They can conserve the land and the resources and still create jobs and let people invest in jobs here in Alaska. I just don't think it has to be one way or the other. I think both can be done if it's handled right.
Is Anchorage the main supply center for the miners?
Yes, it is. Anchorage and Fairbanks, but mainly Anchorage. Most everything comes out of Anchorage. And McGrath, it comes from Anchorage to McGrath, and then it's expedited from there to the smaller bushes. We have a radio that we listen to all the time, and there's always messages that say Warren Magnuson, your parts are in at Mark Air Express, or a message going out, somebody's maybe waiting for tires, your tires are in, please come pick them up, or your stuff is in, let us know how you want us to send it. The people up there are always waiting for something, seems like.
What is the going price for gold now?
The last I heard it was $328 an ounce. So I that was about a week ago.
Can you describe some types of mining terms such as tailings?
Well, tailings are the washed material that stacks up outside your sluice box. It, depending on how much material you move, determines how big your tailings are and how many. There's old tailing piles there from years ago when the old dredges came through there. And those can be a reminder, and you can still get gold out of them that was missed years ago. Yankee Creek has been mined 5 times and there's still gold to be found there. We've been real fortunate where we've been mining, we've hit real good, but now there's 30 feet of overburden above us, so that has to be moved out before we can get to the pay dirt. So it's getting harder and harder to get to the material. There's tailings, and then there's the sluice box is a metal box or a box with they sometimes make the big ones from railroad ties, and that's what your material goes down through, and the water washes down over the tailing pile. It's set at an angle so that the gravity will make the water feed down, and it a funnel-like thing that comes into the sluice box for the big miners. With ours, we have a hopper, but the big miners have a It acts like a hopper. It acts like a big funnel. They put clay in the bottom, and then they leave it set for 3 days, and it sets up really hard. And then they bulldoze this material to this funnel-like thing, and they hit it with water, and the water washes it down into the sluice box. And you wash and wash and wash, and your tailings come out down here, and you have a bulldozer come from this direction and cleans the tailings out. And they have to keep cleaning the tailings out because you're pushing more material in. What goes in must come out. So, see what other terms do they use? And see, I'm just familiar with the sluicing. There's other kinds of mining. There's hard rock mining, where the material's smashed up, and I don't know if it's then sluiced or what. I don't know. I've never been around it. You use bulldozers to push the material up to the sluice box, and you hit it with a heavy stream of water called a nozzle. So the person holding that nozzle is called a nozzler. And then there's either a drag line or a cat at the that takes away the tailings. I think bulldozers are used most of the time now. In the old days, they used drag lines a lot, but I don't think there's too many drag lines being used now to remove the tailings.
Does the EPA come in to inspect you, and if they do, how often?
They come in every year, and sometimes once a year, and usually somebody will alert everyone else and let them know. They won't come right out and say it, but they'll say, put the coffee pot on, and that means EPA is in the area, so watch out.
Are there any state or federal regulations you have to follow?
Yes, EPA, that's what EPA comes and checks on. I don't remember if these were federal or state, probably state men that came to visit us, and they gave us the clean bill of health because we recycled all our water. We just used the same water over and over and over again, and we didn't pollute any of the streams or anything. And they didn't consider us a true miner either. We did it more for fun than anything. It's what they call a recreational miner.
What is an average season for gold mining?
I'd say from the 1st of May till the 1st of October. After that, sometimes you have to quit even before the 1st of October, depending on when the hard freezes come.
And what would be an average earnings during that time?
It would depend on how much material you move. Like I said, ours, the biggest one we ever had was $25,000. If gold was going at $400 an ounce, that would be what?
About 625.
625 ounces. But most of the big miners have between 400 and 700 ounces in each cleanup, and they clean up about every 6 weeks. We would clean up about every week, but we're just such a small operation, and our sluice box is 1/10 the size of their sluice box. So they would sluice 10 times longer than we would, and usually their gold was 10 times more than ours, too.
What would you do differently if you were going to start gold mining now?
I'd find me someone that was wanted to do the same thing and willing to put in some hours and put in some money and go together with me Probably I'd have to file a claim. I don't know whether it would be on state land or if I'd have to lease some land from a Native corporation or what, but I'd have to find good land to mine, good equipment, of a good person to work with me, someone that knew a little bit about mining and equipment, especially up there. Mechanics are invaluable, and someone that would be willing to put in a whole season. With Smokey and I, we just pretty much did it for fun. But I'd like to really try and do a real season with it and see how we make out. Just because I just like to see how we can do. Now that I have a little idea of what can be done, and I see how the other miners operate, I think it would be really fun to go in there and try and do it the right way now and just see what we could do.
Are you interested in making gold jewelry?
Very much so. I have about $1,000 worth of equipment that I've bought, and I've made some gold jewelry and done real well by it. But one thing is, you have to have gold if you're going to make gold jewelry. And so what I'd like to do is to mine gold and save the, just mine just fast and furious during the summer months while the weather permits, and then during the winter months, take and make your gold jewelry. And I've never had to advertise it. You get enough advertisement just word of mouth. Well, I could hardly keep up with my orders. So it's just something that everybody wants gold nuggets. So it's a profitable business, and it's fun. But you have to have a steady hand, and you have to have money to work to buy your findings and the things you need to make gold jewelry.
So you could turn mining into a year-round operation, not just the summertime.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, you could make your jewelry during the winter months, and of course, if I was a man, I would be doing my equipment maintenance and whatnot during the winter months also. But when I couldn't be mining, if you needed a new sluice box, well, you'd be figuring out how to make a new sluice box and things like that.
Have you ever watched a large mining operation?
Yes, I went up to Colorado Creek to watch Toivo Rosander when he did a big cleanup, and it was really exciting. We watched them take their big sluice box and clean it out, and from start to finish we watched them, and it was really something to see. I mean, you saw like a whole pan full of nuggets, and they're so heavy that you could hardly lift them. And then of course they clean up the fines afterward, because they use sorters that separates the gold. It takes the biggest nuggets out first, and then you take the smaller nuggets. They grade them by their size, then they get down to the fines. It was really exciting to see. I'm glad I got to see it.
Who owns most of the land up there?
The native corporations own most of the land. Ebe Anderson, that mines next to us, he has to lease his land from Doyon. Doyon owns a lot of the land, the regional corporation and the native corporations within Doyon own a lot of the land up there.
Do you have to pay a fee to them to mine?
Well, we don't have to, because we're on patented land. It's Toivo's patented land, and he's been generous enough to let us work it. But if you're on native land, yes, you do have to pay a, I don't know if it's a permit or if it's a fee based on the acreage or how they work it. I really don't know. All I know is it cost him about $10,000 last year. He had to pay the Native Corporation for the privilege of mining their ground.
Are there any areas up there that are off limits to mining?
Yes. Yes, there are. That's why you have to, I guess you would have to go to the State Division of Lands and let them know what general area you were interested in mining and find out which areas were open to you.
How long does the permit process take to get a permit to mine?
Well, if you know the area and have the maps and whatnot, it probably wouldn't take you but a month, but boy, for us, it took us all winter to get the paperwork done because we had to write and get the proper maps, and then we had to draw out the area and everything we filed seems like we did it wrong, so they send it back and we had to do it right. And so it took quite a while.
Are there any special laws dealing with miners concerning the IRS?
You have to show the gold that you sell. You don't have to sell all your gold, and you don't have to show your income until such a time as you sell it. You can hold gold, or you can leave it in the ground and just hold it until such a time as you want to declare it. So if you don't want to sell it, if you want to just hold it till the price goes up, there's no law against that. But once you sell it, then you have to declare that as income.
Can you describe any similarities between mining and fishing?
Yes, the gamble. You don't know what you're going to catch in that net, neither do you know how much gold you're going to get out of that material when you put it in. You prospect, which gives you an idea, but you never know when that big one's going to show up, and so that's what makes it exciting. Is when you find that gold in the boxes, you see that shiny color, it just makes your heart race. It's just like seeing a thousand fish in your net. It's the same kind of feeling. It's exciting.
So in some ways, both mining and fishing are like gambling in Las Vegas.
Yeah, they are. They are. Well, life is a gamble, but no matter what you do, there's always chances that you take. So I think it's great for families, both of them, fishing and mining. You work together for a common reason and work together as a family, and the happiest memories that I have are when my children were growing up at the Gillnet site, because they learned there was something to life besides just watching a TV. They learned to cut wood and pack water, and now they can make it on their own. They can do these things, and I don't have to worry about them. And they can feel the satisfaction of a job well done, and feel the excitement of when things are going well. So a lot of times when things don't go well, but you just have to keep plugging along and keep trying. So
sometimes you improvise out in the gold mine. You have to improvise if something breaks down, equipment.
Oh, absolutely, because it might be a week or more before you can get a part in. So it's just like at a fish site, you know, if something breaks down, you just have to do the best you can with what you got. And a lot of that stuff is jury-rigged. So, but if it works, why knock it?